This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Well, it was rumored for weeks, and yesterday it was made official. Boston Globe editor Marty Baron is leaving after 11 years on the job, heading to Washington, where he will become executive editor of the Washington Post. And our intel says there were a lot of ashen-faced newsies wandering around the Globe yesterday. Not that they aren't happy for Marty, just sad for themselves. And Marty Baron joins me by telephone. Welcome, Marty.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
So you know why we here at GBH scooped you guys on this story last Friday?
Well, you reported the rumors. I don't know that you scooped us. We couldn't report the rumors on myself.
I know. That's why we thought we could. So.
Well, great.
Anything in the news business, it's hard to keep some things secret, though, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things you told me last year when we were talking to you at your 10 anniversary interview was that, you know, you feel like the role of a newspaper, a good, worthy newspaper, is to hold, you know, powerful institutions and powerful people accountable. That's going to be a daunting task in Washington.
Well, I think it's an important task. It's central to the role of any news organization, and it's certainly central to the role of the Washington Post. And I think it's critical that the Post do that. It has done it in the past. It does it today, and I trust it's going to do it well in the future as well, and I hope to be part of that.
Is the rivalry between the Washington Post and the New York Times as real as it once was?
You know, I don't have a great sense of that since I am not at the Washington Post yet. Certainly there's a rivalry. I think it's great that there's competition in our business and that there are those kinds of rivalries that keeps us all sharp. You know, they have distinct roles in some ways, and the Post has to pick its shots a bit more than the New York Times does, mm-hmm. because it's a somewhat smaller.
It's a local paper more so, too.
Well, it has, I mean, it's both a local paper, yeah, and a national paper and a worldwide paper. But the New York Times, for the most part, is a national paper. And there are other papers that are covering New York more comprehensively than the New York Times itself. So, I mean, they do good local coverage at the New York Times, but local coverage is that much more important at the Washington Post. It is their community, after all.
One of the things you were credited with here was keeping your investigative unit so active and alive from, you know, way back when you broke the story on the church sexual abuse scandal, and, of course, more recently, the probation scandal, Sal DeMacy's story. Mm-hmm. The Washington Post has certainly done its share. It had that fabulous, you know, thing they did in cooperation with NBC News on the Walter Reed Army Hospital. But
yep,
they haven't had as many. I mean, will that be something you might be looking to, you know, bolster there as well?
Well, I don't know that that's a fair statement. They've had a lot of great investigations. You know, they've won quite a few Pulitzers in the last several years, and they've done other projects that have come close to winning Pulitzers, looking at the intelligence establishment and things of that sort, and investigating corruption in the District of Columbia government. So I'm not sure it's a fair statement to say that they haven't done as much. It's sometimes hard, if you do something like Watergate, it's sometimes hard to match that.
True.
And while we've done great investigations here at the Globe, I'm not sure we can say that something matches our church investigation either. So I think that's a bit of an unfair standard.
You know, Marty, I was trying to put myself in your shoes, and I'm thinking, you know, you've been here 11 years. You're revered by your colleagues, by, you know, great, you know, contacts in the city. You're such a fabric of Boston now. And upping and leaving at, you know, your age and just taking on something like this. I mean, do you feel like that you really wanted to do it? I'm sure it was very flattering. I'm sure they came to you. But is this something you got to just gear yourself up this for, in a way that's just sort of, I would feel overwhelmed, I think.
Right. Well,
you're not going to tell me that, are you?
Thanks. Yeah. So, Emily, after you said that, maybe I should reconsider.
Exactly.
But no, it's something you think about. I'm 58, so this is a great opportunity, but also a tremendous challenge. And you do think about whether you want to take on something like that at this stage of your career, particularly when you become rooted, so rooted, yeah, here in Boston. And And also because I love my colleagues here at the Globe, who work really well together, and I appreciate all the work that they've done and their tremendous dedication. But the Washington Post is the Washington Post, and it's played such an important role in politics and policy and world affairs, and it has such a glorious role in American journalism. That when I was presented with the opportunity, I couldn't help but to take it, and I still have it within me to take on a new challenge, I think, and so I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, all those egos and important people. I don't want to take
egos in our business, Emily. I'm telling you, egos among journalists. I can imagine.
Yeah. So, is there anything that you would have liked seen kind of finished under your watch here in Boston? Maybe the Wade Bossier trial. Is there anything you just wish one last crack at that?
Well, I'd love to be around for the Whitey Bulger trial. That would be great. I'm glad I was here for a lot.
You were.
So.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's sort of out there at the moment that I feel I have to be around for. I mean, most important to me is not sort of what's happening in the news. I mean, a lot has happened. We've had all these incredible sports victories, the Democratic National Convention, the presidential race with Mitt Romney, the presidential race with John Kerry as the Democratic nominee, same-sex marriage here in Massachusetts.
Craigslist killer. I mean, come on.
the Craigslist killer, the Whitey Bulger capture, you name it. I mean, I can't exactly complain that I missed out on the big stories here in Boston. I wanted to make sure that when I left the Globe that we were on solid footing, that we had made the kinds of strides we needed to make in making the transition to a digital future, which is really a digital present. And I think we've done that. And so I feel very good about leaving at this moment. I never would want to leave a place in the middle of a crisis, but to leave a mess for someone else to fix. As you know, we had our crisis here.
We had
multiple crises here.
Threatened shutdown of the Boston Globe.
Sure, there was threatened shutdown and big wage concessions and possible sale and all that sort of stuff. And so all of that, and I'm not one to say at the moment of crisis when people are most dispirited that that's the time to pick up and leave, for me to leave. It seems to me that as a manager and as a leader in the newsroom, I have the obligation to stay during that period of time and to see us through it. And it's in better times that I'm more free to think about other opportunities. And I feel that we're very much in better times now. I can't say that we're minting money, but we're on solid footing for sure. And I think we're very prepared and becoming ever more prepared every day for the digital era. And I feel that now is a good time. If there were a good time, now is a good time. And I think it makes sense to leave when things are going well, actually. So
your publisher there, Chris Mayer, said yesterday that there would be a national search for a new executive editor. And of course, there are a lot of very, very qualified people right inside the Globe. I'm wondering, though, if you think that these persistent rumors about the sale of the Boston Globe could impede that in any way. Somebody thinks, well, I'm not going to uproot myself and go to Boston if the paper is sold, because that's usually the first thing you do is change the editor if a paper is sold.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know where things stand, if they stand anywhere in terms of a sale. I'm not privy to those kinds of discussions. They don't share them with me.
That's good.
And, you know, these rumors have persisted for a long time, and here we are. We're still part of the New York Times Company. So it's quite possible that these rumors will just persist for decades. But I don't know. Anybody who is certainly any outside candidate who thinks about that, if there are going to be outside candidates, and we have many good inside candidates as well, would obviously ask a question about that. But the truth is that our situation is no different than it is for any other news organization, or particularly one that has newspaper roots like ours, because you never know what's going to happen with organizations like ours these days. You just don't know. And it's no different for us than it is for most any metropolitan newspaper around the country these days. So if you're a metropolitan newspaper editor and you're looking at the Globe, you would have to say, the uncertainty that surrounds any uncertainty that surrounds the globe is no different than the uncertainty that surrounds any other metropolitan newspaper in this country.
That's true. So, Marty, I hate questions like this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Is there any editorial issue that stands out in your mind that you really had to wrangle with before you went with it in the paper? I mean, something like naming the woman who was the tipster in the Whitey Bulger case. Was there anything that was really just really a struggle for you?
Well, I don't want to go into specific ones, but there are many struggles. Every day we're dealing with those kinds of things. And we come to the best decision. On the one you mentioned, we did talk about that. We've aired those issues in the past, and we think we made the right decision in that instance. The fact is that Whitey Bulger and his girlfriend knew who the source was in the first place, because there weren't that many people they knew who came from that part of the world. Mm-hmm. So they knew her, and so not like we were revealing anything to him that he didn't already know. So we talked it through, and we came to our best judgment. You know, all the suspicions at that particular time were that there was no source, that in fact the FBI had knew where Bulger was and simply didn't, or certainly had the capability to find him, but simply did not want to, because he would then disclose all sorts of things about the FBI that they didn't want disclosed. And so the persistent rumors, published in some other local publications, by the way, up at the point of his capture, were that there was no source, that was a fabrication on the part of the FBI. You know, we can say it would be one thing for us to run a story that says, in fact, we know the source, but we're not going to tell you who it is. Trust us. I'm not sure people would believe that. People might actually mock us for saying something like that. The only way to demonstrate that, in fact, there was a real person that the FBI was not covering up was to run the name. So we took account of all the different issues in that instance and made our best judgment. And I understand that some people will disagree, but I think this one will stand the test of time.
All right, Marty Baron. It's been a pleasure talking to you and a pleasure working with you over the years. And where's the party? I want to be invited.
I'm not the one to organize my own party, but if there is one, I'll want you there. And I appreciate your kindness over the years.
All right, Marty Baron, leaving for the Washington Post. Good to talk to you.
Okay, take care.
All right, and Kelly Crossley is back in Studio 3.
Emily, coming up, we're looking at the casino battle in Western Massachusetts. Mohegan Sun wants to build one in Palmer, and three other companies are looking at the city of Springfield. I'll talk with reporters covering the unfolding drama.
All right, I'm Emily Rooney.
I'm Kelly Crossley. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.